Welcome to Beyond the Ballot. I'm Max, and I'm joined here today by my guest Rory. And this week, it's all eyes on the UK budget, because Rachel Reeves has unveiled her 2025 plan, and it's already stirring controversy. We're going to be breaking down what's changed, who wins, who loses, and why some say she's broken promises. Plus, the political fallout, Kemi Badenoch's attack, and the OBR leak that shook Westminster. So let's start with the numbers. We're going to be looking first at the frozen thresholds. So obviously, as you know, Rory, income tax and national insurance thresholds are frozen until 2030 to 2031. And this can cause something called the fiscal drag. So not only may your pay rise, but more of it will end up being taxed. But also, if we look at how much is going to be raised, it's expected to raise around 38 billion. What are your thoughts then about this idea of this stealth tax?
Well, the increase in the freeze, it was going to expire in 2028.
Yeah.
And they would not change the tax thresholds.
Yeah.
Rachel Reeves has now frozen that for another 3 years.
Yeah.
And as income grows, more people are going to earn higher incomes and they're going to drift into those higher tax brackets, which will raise money for the Exchequer. Yeah. And that's being heavily criticised by everyone across the political spectrum because Rachel Reeves says she wouldn't be raising taxes on working people, and now she is silently raising taxes by slowly drifting people into higher tax brackets.
I mean, it's a smart way, isn't it, to generate revenue, really, because she was talking about this hole in, or black hole, as you maybe you could put it, in like the public finances. And this is where she's had this idea of maybe creating this fiscal headroom, which is going to be allowed to improve our health service, our public services, which have come under scrutiny the past year. Do you think this is a clever tactic used by her, maybe, to not be deliberately putting up our taxes, but just to like drag us slowly but silently over there?
I think politically for her, not to say that she's going to rise, increase taxes, like she was flirting with that idea of increasing income tax by 2p for some really high brackets. The fact that she's not talking about this is she's increasing the money going in. She's silently increasing taxes, but she's kind of hidden behind the fact that she hasn't increased taxes.
Yeah.
She's just let the taxes, which are already really high, she's let them stay the same.
Yeah.
When she said that she would, well, I mean, going into the election, she said she'd be cutting taxes, and obviously she's been increasing them, breaking promises. So the fact that she's been able to do this without explicitly saying that she's actually raising taxes is doing her a lot of political favours.
And also, if we look at the way that she sort of telegraphed that she was going to raise income tax, and then she backtracked on it so close to the actual budget, surely that sort of insecurity about it wasn't going to sit well with the population, especially as they were preparing maybe to look at their financial situation as they were expecting more income tax.
Yeah, I mean, I think her strategy going into it was clever, but the way the cards fell was disastrous for her.
Yeah.
There were leaks coming out saying that she was going to increase income tax, and all that speculation led to some more leaks saying that she actually wouldn't. And this speculation that she would basically going into the budget, everyone thought it was going to be really bad.
Yeah.
And it saying that she's going to, flirting with the idea that it's going to be really, really bad, and then getting to the budget and then making tax commitments, which are maybe not seen as bad as what they could have been, would make them much more favourable. But the fact that all these leaks basically put bullet holes through her plan, and it all just fell apart, and she couldn't get that effect that she wanted to of the budget coming across as much more successful than it actually did.
And I think there's an inquiry happening now about Keir Starmer and Rachel Reeves misleading the public. So I feel like that lack of trust is not going to really help the Labour Party support. I mean, they're already falling behind in the polls.
Yeah.
Obviously, Reform have overtaken them and the Greens are gathering support. What do you think that maybe Keir Starmer should be doing at this point? Like, should he be looking to maybe replace the Chancellor that he's backed for a while and maybe bring in someone new?
I think that Rachel Reeves, I think most people can agree that she's not been a good Chancellor, and I think most people can agree that Labour hasn't had a great start.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, it's not really a start anymore. I mean, they're nearly halfway through. Well, I mean, a year and a
year into their term. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, and a bit into their term. But I think with all the, especially the green rise you're talking about, and now Starmer initially challenged from the right with Reform, now he's being challenged from the left with the Greens, and maybe to a smaller extent with the Liberal Democrats. If Rachel Reeves goes, who's seen as pretty moderate, and you get someone who...
Who do you bring in, really?
Well, I mean, you probably bring in someone, like, worse, arguably. Someone maybe a little bit more to the left of the Labour Party, someone who's probably going to raise taxes even more and then increase spending even more, increase borrowing even more, and it would be Rachel Reeves 2.0. So I think Starmer's in a very tough position where he's currently got someone who isn't great, but then if he gets rid of her, then he's probably going to be forced to bring in someone who could be even worse.
Yeah.
And so I think Starmer's going in, like, in his first speech, his main priority was honesty. He's failed on that. So I think if he's actually going to be honest, then you might as well be honest. So that would be my, that's what I think Starmer should do.
Yeah, I mean, I sort of understand where you're coming from. I mean, in the election, he told the British public face to face that he wouldn't raise taxes. And Rishi Sunak did tell everyone, didn't he, that they would do it. But I guess the public didn't really listen because they were kind of blinded by the almost collapse of the Conservative Party. And they were almost looking at all of the negatives that the Conservative Party had brought and not what the potential effects of bringing in a Labour government.
Yeah, I think last year's election was a rejection of the Conservatives rather than an approval of the Labour Party.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
And Labour got the lowest share of the vote for any majority government in British history, let alone one that secured a Blair-like majority.
Yeah.
Extremely shallow. And that's obviously now really vulnerable to a lot of Reform gains. I mean, last July, I would have expected that the Tory party would have rebuilt. And obviously, last September, that did seem to be the case. They were going upwards, but going into those local elections, that wasn't, obviously has not been the case. And Reform has managed to take that steam. And now Reform are taking the votes away from the Labour Party. Those red, blue collar working class people that Boris Johnson managed to convince back in 2019.
Yeah. I think also if we look at, obviously the budget was not received well by the British public, but if we look at Kemi Badenoch's reaction to that, I mean, she called it a total humiliation and called her spineless and incompetent. Do you think that attack was maybe a bit too much? Maybe, I mean, they were in Parliament. You're meant to be a bit more sophisticated, perhaps, than that. It should be a bit more measured, a bit more maybe polite and giving a bit more constructive criticism, maybe.
Yeah, well, I'm no spokesperson for Kemi Badenoch, but I think that the way she framed her arguments, I mean, it's not really, I mean, Rachel blames, like, Donald Trump, she blames inflation, she blames a lot of other things, when in reality you had Jeremy Hunt, and maybe to a lesser extent, maybe like Rishi Sunak even, he had COVID, then he had Ukraine to deal with those extortionate price rises, and the economy was not looking good in early 2022, and it was not looking good in 2020, but somehow they managed to semi-recover, even after Liz Truss's mini-budget, which has got, rightly, a lot of criticism. Jeremy Hunt managed to bring things back to where they were before the election. And I think the fact that Rachel Reeves has now thrown away that growth, she's thrown away that economic momentum.
Growth has stalled, hasn't it?
Yeah, it is stalled. Yeah. And, I mean, the way that Rachel Reeves has got rid of that economic momentum, I don't think it's down to international affairs, because arguably the Tories had it worse with COVID and then with the inflation rises in Ukraine. So I don't think she should be blaming the world or things that are outside of her control. I think she should be focusing on what is actually her fault. But to answer your question directly, I think Kemi Badenoch's response. I think she, herself, she's in a quite a tough spot at the moment. So I think she, when she was elected Tory leader, she was thought to be really fiery. Yeah, but I think that's what the personality and the kind of political style that many Tories wanted from their leader.
I mean, it shows that she cares, doesn't it? I mean, you don't want a leader that isn't going to react to the budget and like show their views. I mean, maybe she could have said what she would have done herself. Maybe instead of slandering Rachel Reeves,
well,
she could have...
I've listened to her response, I think, maybe twice now.
Yeah.
And she... Yes, she has been talking about Rachel Reeves, but equally, like going into the budget, she was really banging on about cutting welfare spending and maybe slightly using that her golden economic rule of half of the money saved would cut taxes, the other half would cut the deficit, which are two big problems for the government right now and two problems that should probably be fixed if they want to win back votes. So I think she is... trying to provide an alternative.
Yeah.
And she was talking about that going into the budget. I think her budget speech, I agree, she probably wasn't really talking about what she would have done. But, I mean, she did have slight mentions and slight references to what she would have done, like cutting spending.
Yeah. Yeah.
But even if you look at PMQs, I mean, Starmer's really thrown... He's almost trying to pretend that she's actually never, like, published any of this... She wants to cut £47 billion from the welfare budget, which is a lot of money. And Starmer's saying that he doesn't know where like the money's coming from when like clearly she's actually got... like in her fairness, she has got like a credible list, because I think going into the... like even going back to the his Starmer's first speech, he wanted honesty, but I think Kemi's kind of going for credibility and responsibility. And I think... although she was being hypercritical of the Chancellor,
yes,
I do think it would be maybe slightly unfair not to say that maybe she wasn't providing her own alternative, because she has been doing that in the run-up to it.
I think if we look at like the credibility of both parties, I mean, right now, Labour's first budget didn't really change much. That's where this whole narrative came of raising income tax. But then if we also look at the Conservatives, their economic credibility is not particularly great either.
No.
I mean, Keir Starmer still brings up Kemi Badenoch's role in Liz Truss's mini budget that, of course, crashed the economy and ultimately led to her losing her job. And then this sort of downhill in the polls started to happen.
Mm. I think the credibility of both parties is bust. I think that's why you're seeing parties like Reform and the Greens doing really well. I mean, before Zach Polanski got elected to, I would have said, the Lib Dems, but obviously they've kind of stalled in the polls as well. They're still very, both parties are still very unpopular. I mean, I've just got these figures up. More in common, the latest one, Labour's negative 49 net approval rating.
Yeah.
Tories negative 34, which is, I mean, those are terrible numbers. That's both of, in both, more than half of the British public have a negative view on either party. I think that the Tories, their main talking points are an improved economy and improved borders, and that was their kind of mantra going into their party conference. I think some of the YouGov polls, some of the poll trackers, I've got Economist here as well. If you're looking at the economy, the Tories are the most trusted with the economy, but it's nothing really to bang on home about. It's nothing to write on home about. Yeah. It's not that great. It's only like a 20 point out of 100 people say the Tories. Yeah. And actually, they're only maybe 2 or 3 points higher than don't know or none. So I don't think that any party has a grip or a credible alternative to the economic argument. I don't think the public see Labour as being party of higher taxes, higher benefits, Rachel Reeves, Tories, party of Liz Truss, the mini budget, Reform don't really have an alternative. They want higher they want lower taxes and higher spending, which everyone knows actually just can't be done. Lib Dems aren't really providing any arguments, and the Greens are
gaining.
The Greens are gaining ground, but
they don't have any like actual credibility.
They don't have any exactly, but they've got like their want wealth taxes and everything. So, and even that probably won't be popular for around 80% of the public. Yeah. So I don't think any of the major five parties now actually have a popular route or popular strategy for the economy.
I think because of how like divisive the way that the country views each of the parties, I feel like at the next election, it's going to be interesting to see who the country votes for, really. I mean, if they're dissatisfied with Labour, then they're going to be looking at, obviously, alternatives, even to the extent of looking at, obviously, Reform and the Greens as well. I feel like there could be like a maybe a, not like a hung parliament, but there could be some sort of coalition between two parties that we normally wouldn't expect to see join together. And maybe another Lib Dems Conservative, maybe. But
maybe a Lib Dem Conservative. I've been hearing, like, this time last year, a lot of people were saying, okay, there's probably going to be like a Labour-Liberal Democrat coalition.
Yeah.
Or there'd be a Tory-Reform coalition, but just seeing the differences between the Conservatives and Reform UK. I mean, some people are even talking about some grand coalition between the Labour Party and the Tory Party. Last week, the new immigration figures came out, and that has the migration going down. And I think Reform UK rely on two things. I think the first one is obviously Nigel Farage.
Nigel Farage, yeah.
And the second one is, like, terrible migration. So
because
if you
that's what they're, like, honing in.
That's exactly, that's where they're getting their votes from. And so the... If you... With Shabana Mahmood, who is probably, what some would probably say, blue Labour, probably a bit quite socially conservative, someone who wants to get migration figures down, and who is, like, succeeding, even Yvette Cooper, who's now the Foreign Secretary, their plan is succeeding, I think. If you see that migration becomes less and less of an issue, then... And the economy keeps... the economy doesn't improve, then I think 2029 will become much more of an economy election as opposed to an immigration thing, which it probably was last year. And I think if you see that, a lot of people are saying that, oh, the Conservatives, we can just write them off. But I think that combination of the public seeing the Tories as being the most trusted with the economy, and I think if you see the general prudence and fiscal conservatism of the Conservatives right now, I don't think we should be writing off the Tories just yet.
Yeah, and I think if we look at the idea of maybe being an economic election, if we turn our focus back to the budget, we could look at, in terms of welfare, the two-child benefit cap being scrapped, because Rachel Reeves did say that it was fully funded because of the gambling taxes that they've introduced on different companies. Do you feel like, surely, that the Labour Party are maybe just paying for people to have more children in a way, and that the money that they should be using maybe on schooling, education, healthcare is instead being used to fund people's families?
I think a talking point that not a lot of people are actually talking about with two-child benefit cap, yes, people can't really afford it, but equally, the population here is declining. And so if you want more workers, maybe in like
you're
two
just
decades,
create an incentive people to have more children.
Exactly. And I'm not that opposed against scrapping the two-child benefit cap in that respect, because I think population will soon become an issue. And even going like back to migration, if you have quite a stubborn population against migration, I mean, the two main parties, the Tories and two of the three, I guess we can now say, the Tories and Reform, both of them combined in the vote share have about 45 to 50% of the vote. And both of their party policies is lower immigration. So if you have quite a stubborn population against importing migrants, importing workers into the UK, I think that maybe in political dividends that will come back to Labour if they want to increase the population. Although, having said that, that is pretty obviously probably not the reason they've brought this in. They've brought this in because the Greens, maybe Reform even, both want to scrap the two-child benefit cap. Labour, I think, jumped the gun. I think they've done it before. Reform,
yeah.
Reform and the Greens, and yeah, that takes a argument away from Reform. Maybe
for
the
future,
Greens,
maybe in the
exactly.
election, yeah.
And if you see that combined with the migration figures, then I think Nigel Farage will be a bit worried.
Yeah.
Because if you saw in the summer, he was doing really well. He was about 33 in the poll trackers. Now he's only about 29. So he's losing
doing
a
well,
bit.
But like
he's doing really well. I mean, Labour's at 18% in the poll tracker now. That's so 11 points behind Reform, which is a bigger lead than in July. But I think it's not what Farage would probably want to see, especially at a time when it's kind of about the economy and Labour's not great with the economy. And so the fact that you're not really making gains against Labour is, I'd say, a bit unhealthy for them.
I think maybe a problem that that Labour Party need to address is the welfare situation, because I think that too many people are capitalising on this idea of you might not need to work to be able to make money, you know, as in the Labour Party sometimes are just funding people with benefits. Because this idea, I read something in the Times the other day about people attempting to diagnose themselves with different mental health problems, and then they're obviously going to be able to capitalise that and not work. Surely that there's a problem that needs to be addressed with the welfare industry, and less money needs to be pumped into the welfare budget.
Yeah, I agree. I think that the welfare budget is very high. I think the fact that you're now getting rid of a cap on a large part of the welfare budget is maybe economically imprudent, and actually that is also at risk of being like irresponsibly people just going through some loopholes and claiming those benefits. I don't think for an economy to be spending a lot. And going into the budget again, we were expecting this deficit from last year's budget of about £20 billion. That turned to about £2 billion. Obviously, this scandal that's now emerged, and now the Tories are wanting to
capitalise on that. Yeah.
Yeah. But that, and then there turned out to be a 4.1 budget surplus. So actually, the Exchequer is taking in more money than it's spending. So
yes,
the government's becoming a bit richer. But that doesn't mean the economy's growing. It means that the government has more spending power, about 4.1 more, backs to build back the deficit or get rid of the deficit.
Yeah.
But the welfare spending, it's not as easy to change, because once you give it to a lot of people and you take it away, that's really unpopular.
Problems, weren't there? Yeah.
That's much more unpopular when you take it away than raising taxes, because that's much more easier to reverse.
Would you say they've almost like trapped themselves, maybe, as in there's almost like no way out? They almost have to deliver more money to these people who don't want to work, instead of backtracking on it and potentially losing all their voters.
Yeah, I mean, they're being pushed into a corner. And I think if you see populist outfits like Reform UK and now the Greens, they will be attacked on that, because eventually they will either have to raise taxes again or they're going to have to cut spending, both of which are really unpopular. But I think in the long term, you should probably be cutting spending, especially given how big the deficit is, especially after the furlough scheme during COVID.
Furlough scheme introduced by, of course,
by
Rishi
Sunak.
Yeah.
But that was being cut by the Tories.
Yeah.
Until Labour came in, and when obviously the first few months when they're under a Tory budget, but obviously when business confidence crashed, the bond markets crashed. I don't think it's just not Labour, and I think that the rhetoric coming from them initially has probably a factor that the economy's bust at the moment. But welfare spending, it's it's much more politically complicated to backtrack, particularly if you are the Labour Party, who gets a lot of its votes from maybe more lower class people who are probably more in favour of economic redistribution.
Yeah.
And so to go against your founding principles, arguably, to maybe improve the economy. I mean, Starmer, going back to his first speech, he said, and even the campaign, he said that he would choose the country over his country first, party second. And I think this is a very clear example of where he could make that choice. This is a very clear opportunity for him to improve the economy or improve his personal poll ratings. And I think that he chose the second with Rachel Reeves.
Yes.
I think they want short-term benefits, particularly going into these 2026,
yeah,
Holyrood and Senedd and local elections, which Labour arguably have the most to lose. Well, not arguably, Labour have the most to lose in these elections.
They did so well in the general election, of course.
I mean, exactly. I mean, these are Labour councils with Labour councillors that probably a lot will go flip to Reform, like they did in May, just with the Tories. And if you see the Senedd, where they have a slight majority now, I think it's 50. They've got 30 seats in a 60-seat parliament in Wales. They could lose that chamber for the first time since its creation in 1999, was it?
Yeah, I think that's it, yeah.
Yeah, so, and it's not like they're going to lose by a bit. They're going to lose massively. And obviously, the Senedd size is increasing to 96. And now it's being seen as a two-horse race between Plaid Cymru and Reform UK. So I think for these short-term political choices, I think Starmer chose that over what probably is best for the country.
Yeah. I think also if we look at some of the other changes in the budget, these ideas of the idea of passive income taxes as well. So this idea of dividends, rental and savings income are all facing higher rates, and the dividends are expected to rise by 2 points from 2026, and then savings and property income will follow in 2027. And this idea of a mansion tax coming into place, where homes over £2 million are going to face a new levy, surely that puts like aspiring high value homeowners at like a disadvantage. They're not going to aspire to maybe have a nice house, really. I mean, I feel like there's a problem with the, there have been problems in the past, scandals maybe, with the infrastructure and the way that the building regulations have been in some parts of the country. So I feel like having a mansion tax is almost squeezing the working class people even more. And that's the sort of danger when these subtle taxes are implemented.
Yeah, I think Labour's budget and last year's budget, and with all these benefit rises, they are definitely incentivizing, or not incentivizing, work. They're not incentivizing for people to work harder to get a better reward.
Like, why would someone aspire to own a £2 million house when they're just going to get taxed for it?
They're going to just get taxed for it. And so people aren't going to want to do those things. They're going to claim benefits. So actually, you've got more people relying on the state, and the state has got no people to get tax money from, because all those people are taking the money rather than putting it in through benefits, because they don't actually want to earn money, because they know then they're working for nothing, basically, because that's just going to be taxed and just sent to the Treasury. And I think a tax system should broadly go hand in hand with what a government wants to achieve. They want to loosen the housing market. So if you're putting taxes on stamp duty, if you're putting taxes on people moving and houses themselves, that is really fixing people into their houses. And if you want a more fluid housing market, that completely goes against that. So if you were to cut taxes, and if you were to cut spending, then you'd get more people into work, more people would be forced to work. So that brings in more money, actually, if you cut the taxes. That kind of cancels that out.
Yeah.
And then you've got a higher productivity economy, which in the long term is gonna
benefit.
Yeah, it's gonna be much better, and the economy will rise. The economy will increase. It will grow. People will feel it in their pockets. But I'm not sure what, other than the fact that they want to maintain popularity or whatever left they've got until those 2026 elections, when maybe Labour just call it time out and they have to sub in Starmer for someone maybe even more controversial or could shake the system, like Andy Burnham or Shabana Moo's probably a long shot, but maybe Angela Rayner could make a comeback.
I mean, you don't know if you saw, but Jacob Rees-Mogg did endorse Angela Rayner. I mean, she wasn't very happy about that.
No.
To be honest, I mean, being endorsed by someone from the opposition party could be seen as a joke, really.
Yeah.
To be honest. And I think with Shabana Mahmood, I think she's a bit too right-wing, the Labour Party. I mean, if we look at, even Reform asked her to move with them. And she just told Farage to sod off, didn't she?
Yeah, well, over my dead body, I think it was. Her tweet. I think Starmer's... I wouldn't be surprised if Starmer doesn't make it until the summer.
I think the pressure is mounting on him and his chancellor.
Exactly, and I think if Reeves goes, then it will be even more difficult for Starmer. So I think he can't really get rid of Reeves, because otherwise he's starting the... starting to get rid of him. I mean, that's kind of, he's surrendering to the people who are saying, oh, you've done a terrible job with the economy. So I don't think he would, he can't afford that politically. He does not have the political capital to withstand that. I think Reeves and Starmer, if Reeves goes, Starmer will go. Well, Starmer will quickly follow, because his main thing was grow the economy. Okay, you've got rid of someone who was a diehard, okay, let's grow the economy. So I think if you admit you failed on that front, then I don't think he could survive that with all the miracles he's survived so far.
Yeah, I think also the way that they're taxing the super rich as well. I mean, some of the economy is being developed and it normally grows from these large businesses that are brought over here by these super rich people. But the way that they're taxing the billionaires more, billionaires are leaving the country. They don't see Britain as a place where they're going to be able to make profit. I mean, if you look at Dubai, as you just mentioned, there are obviously the tax regulations are a lot.
Exactly.
They're not as... hardcore. Well,
income tax is 0%, but I mean, everything's really expensive.
Yeah,
there.
Yeah.
But exactly. I mean, I don't think he's always trying to, maybe I wouldn't say persuade, but he's definitely making
appealing
it difficult.
To the working class.
Definitely making it difficult for people who contribute a lot
to tax revenues to
leave. I mean, he's really making it difficult for them to stay.
Yeah, and then he's giving more of the taxpayers' money to people who don't work, so there's going to be a sort of clash there, isn't there?
Exactly. And so you're losing people who bring in money, but then you're increasing the amount of people who take that money from you.
Yeah.
So I think I wouldn't be surprised. I mean, the economy is already going in the red, but I think maybe it goes into dark, bloody red.
And I also think that if we look at the small businesses as well in England that need to have the ability to be able to thrive, I think it's good that the minimum wage has been increased to £12.71 an hour from 2026, as it helps these lower paid workers perhaps. But I think it's squeezing these small businesses a bit more.
Exactly.
And they're going to struggle in the long term.
Yeah, I mean, you've got their employer's national insurance, which I think everyone really expect it would bring a lot of money.
Yeah.
But I mean, it's costing a lot more money, as is the family farms tax or the inheritance tax on farms.
Yeah.
Or the abolition of that exemption.
And the changes in the way that pensioners are going to be taxed more, aren't they? So that's not...
So, I don't think that the short-term political gain as well, which I think they are really hyper focused on.
Yes.
Because I think even they would admit they're probably not going to, as even though they say otherwise on the airwaves, they're they aren't going to, I don't think they're going to be the people who are going to represent Labour at the next election. So preserving some sort of legacy. I'm not saying they want to make it so bad that they get like remembered in the history books, but I think they do want to be popular or buy some more time for them maybe to do the things that maybe seem more Labour-like. I mean, the NHS, obviously, that's a very big success for Labour. I think that's the only thing that I think people can. I think that's the only thing people can say. Yeah, to be fair, I mean, despite everything else being bad, despite immigration being bad, despite the economy being bad, I think that and foreign policy, I think, are the two things that the Labour government have actually done very well, particularly the NHS.
And I think that's where the argument of perhaps Wes Streeting being the next leader of the Labour Party coming in as a narrative, maybe because of how
he's got a good track record.
Because he's done well with the NHS. He's got a good track record. He's a confident person. He's someone that the British people could get behind.
Yeah, I think you've got some evidence of that already. I mean, when was it? September, he had a cabinet reshuffle. David Lammy, he moved from the Foreign Office. Slight downgrade, but to Deputy Prime Minister, right-hand man. So I think that is something that a lot of people can pick up that he is rewarding those type of people.
And I think David Lammy's under a lot of pressure or scrutiny right now because of the whole, because obviously he is Justice Secretary and the fact that he doesn't know how many more migrant sex offenders he's let loose on the streets does not exactly fill people with confidence at our country's security system.
Yeah,
maybe.
But then I think maybe that even suggests that maybe it's not the person, maybe it's the department. I think,
and that's why they brought in obviously Shabana Mahmood to rectify the idea of too many.
She moved from the Justice Department. I wouldn't say it wasn't often talked about, but that wasn't a huge success. But if you think about it, it's not that different from the Home Office. I mean, you probably want someone who's maybe a bit more tougher in those two departments. And I think maybe Shabana didn't really find her feet in the Justice Department, but she is making very popular nationally, maybe not inside the Labour Party, but she is making very popular moves with her new migration bill. I think there's been a lot of talk and there's been no real action from the Labour Party, but I think this is the first credible example where you can see that maybe they are stickers.
Yeah. So if we look at the budget overall, then so could we say that it raises revenue on paper, but after a while, the ordinary middle-class people of Britain are going to start to feel squeezed maybe for their money, and that will ultimately end to discontent maybe with the Labour Party.
This time last year, maybe just after the general election, Reform is a long shot. Now, I'd say maybe Labour's a long shot to win the next election. I think the budget, I think their big, grand, bold strategy of making it sound worse before and then making it seem better or not as bad when you had these leaks or speculation coming out that maybe they were flirting with the idea of actually increasing taxes.
Yes.
I think that...
Could that show desperation maybe? That could have been going against their manifesto promise. So
yeah, I think it's clever strategy. But obviously, as I said at the beginning, it was not executed well at all. Even with the OBR budget leaks, that's now has an inquiry. Yeah. There are now some calls for an inquiry going into what did Reeve know and when about the budget surpluses and deficits. So I think, it was a good plan, but went wrong. Yeah.
And just on your mention of the OBR leak, for our listeners, just for a little explanation then. So normally the independent watchdog known as the OBR releases its forecasts after the Chancellor delivers her budget in the Houses of Parliament. However, this time, the full report with all tax increases and all the changes went public before the budget. So all the ministers were able to read what was going to happen before the Chancellor delivered it. And this caused and sent this outrage across Westminster, and it also undermined the government's credibility and their narrative as well. Mm. I mean, it's tradition. And I think going against that, it's not right that people should be able to read it before the Chancellor delivers it.
I've seen a lot of moments when the Speaker of the House of Commons or the Deputy Speaker has criticised government ministers that any new legislation or policy should be announced in the chamber, not from the media or any other source.
Yeah, I mean, so, she's basically leaking little bits of the budget week by week.
Yeah, well, I'd say it's maybe unfair that she is leaking it. She doesn't actually have any administrative control of the OBR. Yeah,
but she did call an emergency press conference to say that
she'd gone back at the beginning of November. She did make that press conference, which shook the market again, like Starmer's speech in the Garden last year under that infamous fixing the foundations, which not fix any foundations. I don't think there are any more foundations there. But I think, I somewhat respect the plan. I wouldn't have thought of it myself. But it just didn't work out well for reason. I think this is a really crucial time when things need to work out for her. I think that it completely took away the
trust, maybe.
The trust, but I'd say it took away the effect that they were going for, of people not being grateful, but of people perceiving the budget as being, it was far less bad than we thought it was going to be. And I do say far less bad rather than far better.
Yeah.
Because I don't think anyone's thinking that the budget went really well for her. I think it's a bit of a Labour disaster.
I mean, I think the tactic behind... I don't know if Reeves knew about the whole leaks. I mean, maybe she was trying to get the markets ready, perhaps.
Yeah, no, I don't think she was behind the leak. I think she was pretty surprised in the chamber. Yeah. But and then you've got these Labour politicians saying, oh, well, Kemi's response, which everyone's really talking about, how good that was. And they're all saying, oh, well, she had an extra half an hour to prepare. You can't really prepare a 20-minute budget speech, a really good 20-minute budget speech, if I may say so myself, in 30 minutes. So I think that's quite, not I wouldn't say ludicrous, but I would raise an eyebrow at claims of that.
Yeah. So from, let's just do like a roundup then of this little segment today. So would you say that budgets aren't just about the numbers on the paper, it's also about this idea of trust, fairness, and having transparency with the British public?
Yeah, I think 100%. I think those values, those principles, I think they influence things that are outside of the Chancellor's control, things like interest rates, things like the gilt market, things that she can't actually control, business confidence. I think her strategy that she did could have even more business confidence. I mean, there's not a lot of business confidence for the Labour Party.
I mean, even the small businesses are getting squeezed
now. Yeah. I think that they've completely turned their backs on the Labour Party. I'd just say the budget wasn't, I think they were thinking it was going to be something big.
Yeah.
It turned into a disaster. You've now got the opposition asking for two inquiries, one into what Rachel Reeves knew about the state of the economy going into the budget.
Yeah, and the idea of misleading the public,
Parliament.
Yeah.
And even the OBR leak. So I think she went into it thinking it was going to be a great plan.
Yeah.
Korea was going to be saved for about 2 months. But no, it hasn't gone well for her.
Final question then. Should she go? When do you if you think so, then when do you think that's going to happen then?
I think Starmer gets the final say. I think he knows that if she goes, he goes. So I think
it depends how long he wants
to be in number 10, and it depends how long he wants the economy.
He's really got left.
Yeah,
to be honest.
I mean, I don't see Reeves staying on until the summer. I don't see Starmer staying on until the summer. I think she will go after the mayor elections. I think you'll get calls and people will be marching towards him going. The summer, obviously a very bad season for illegal migrants crossing the channel. If it's really, really bad, then I think Rachel Reeves's budget, her 2 for 2 bad budgets, I don't think it's going to make it to a third. Yeah.
Thank you, Rory. So that's our take then. The 2025 budget raises revenue, supports some households, but hits savers and ordinary workers subtly. Promises are questioned, opposition is vocal, and the OBR leak added chaos. If you're watching your wages, your savings, or your retirement plans perhaps, keep an eye on how this is going to play out. Thank you for listening to Beyond the Ballot. Join us next week for more analysis on the stories shaping UK politics. Thank you.